All right, we started the two dots on the bottom of Chatamut Bet. Gemara quotes from our Mishnah, the Lishkat Parhedrin, which is where they sequestered the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippurim. Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, v'chi Lishkat Parhedrin haita? Is that really the name of this chamber in which they sequestered the Kohen Gadol? V'lo Lishkat Balvati haita? Isn't the name Balvati, Balvati referring to ministers, term of respect, term that was considered to be of a positive nature. Ella, b'tchila yukorin atal lishkat balvati. Originally, that was the name of the chamber. But then, mitoch shenotnim alav mamon l'kuna, u'machlifim ota kol 12 chodesh, since the institution of Kohen Gadol deteriorated to the point where they were purchasing it from the government, like any other official government position, which in their day was acquired through paying, bribery, kifahedrin alalu, that you get switched out every 12 months. These pekidei amelech, people are appointed to service the king that are switched out every 12 months. These political positions, which involved, again, being acquired by paying for the position, I assume that there was a lot of benefit in the position that you were able to make back all the money that you expended to get there by having the position. But people did that and they switched them out every 12 months because the king benefited by having a new person pay him for that position. So therefore they called it Lishkat Parhedrin, which referred to this governmental position because the institution of the Kohen Gadol had turned into a similar government position like any other government position within the political system. They changed the Tatar name from Balvati to Parhedrin, which had much more negative connotation than the positive that was associated with Balvati. It's not Hatam. Now we have a Mishnah over there. The Mishnah itself here has nothing to do with our Gemara except for the fact that it relates to this issue of Parhedrin and the word Parhedrin. But the Mishnah itself is not necessarily connected. It's totally outside of the realm of this Gemara. The Mishnah here discussing about Trumot Masrot Chala is in a normal situation where one is Mafrish Trumot and Masrot. They take produce that they have. It reaches the point where you're chayav in Shemot and Masrot. If it was one of the Shivat Aminim, then there's a possibility that you allocated a portion of it for Bikurim while it was still on the tree. After that, the first thing that you take off from produce is Truma. Truma, min HaTorah, has no Shi'ur. But the Chachamim established that Truma should have a Shi'ur of either 1/40th, 1/50th, 1/60th. Benoni is 1/50th, 2%. That one would take off 2% of the produce towards Truma. After you take off Truma, then you remove Maaser Rishon. Maaser Rishon is gifted to the Levi. Within Maaser Rishon, the Levi has to pay 10% of that to the Kohen, which is Trumat Maaser. Now, with regards to Truma Gedola and Trumat Maaser, something that is Tevel, or something that is Trumat Maaser or Truma, is Chayav Mita Bidei Shemaim. One who eats Truma when they are a Zar, or Trumat Maaser when they are a Zar, or tevel, something that does not have Truma Gedola or Trumat Maaser removed from it, is Chayav Mita Bidei Shemayim. So there's serious implications to consuming produce that doesn't have the Truma Gedola or the Trumat Maaser removed from it. So the Maaser Rishon, the Levi takes. Maaser Rishon, after it has Trumat Maaser removed from it, is completely chulin. That means that if you go over to the Levi's house, he can share his Maaser Rishon with you. Unlike if you go to the Kohen's house, he cannot share his Truma with you. You have to be someone who is qualified to eat Truma in order to participate or consume Truma. Then after that you have Maaser Sheni. Out of 4 out of the 6 years of the cycle, you have Maaser Sheni. Maaser Sheni is brought up to Yerushalayim and eaten in Yerushalayim by the owner of the produce. But that's 10% of the produce after you've removed the other items goes towards Maaser Sheni. In 2 of the years, that's year 3 and year 6 of the Shemitah cycle, then you would give it to Maaser Ani. You would give it to the Aniyim, that 10%. Once again, the Maaser Ani is completely chulin. It means if the Ani wants to share it, sell it, do whatever he wants with it, it's fine. Maaser Sheni is under a restriction of being eaten outside of Yerushalayim. There's an Isur Lav to eat it. Lo tuchal lechol bisharecha. You can't eat Maaser Sheni outside of Yerushalayim. That's if you had regular produce in a situation where you had to remove all of the matanot that are associated with that produce. What ended up happening many times, and this is what's going to be discussed here, is that you purchased your produce from someone who you're uncertain as to whether they removed their trumot and masrot. Purchased from an Am Haaretz, it's what's called demai in the Mishnayot, something where there's a certain amount of uncertainty as to whether trumot and masrot were removed. The Chachamim instituted in those situations that a person at least does the minimum to get rid of all the problems, the chiyuvei mita, And then, after that, they do the separations that are necessary, but they keep it. So, for instance, and in cases of Demai, where you have a safek with regards to Shumot and Masrot, the Gemara assumes in all cases that Shuma Gedola was taken. It's taken by the Amei Aretz, because they did a survey and they found out that all the Amei Aretz were taking off Shuma Gedola. First of all, because it doesn't take anything, there's no shiur. We said the Chachamim established 2%. But even the smallest amount, one little wheat kernel can be motzi you in terms of Shuma Gedola. So there's really no expense and no difficulty. As well as, it was clear that there was a chiyuv mitei b'dei shamayim associated with it. So therefore, people removed Shuma Gedola without any questions. So whenever you got this fake, the assumption was Shuma Gedola was for sure taken off of it. But what they didn't assume was taken off of it was Shumat Maser. Shumat Maser, which has the same din as Shuma and the same punishment as Shuma, many times it wasn't taken off because it involved removing, first of all, Maaser Rishon for the Levi, and then taking off the Shumat Maser from that Maaser Rishon. So anytime you bump into Demai, we ask you to separate out the Maaser Rishon and take off the Shumat Maser. That Shumat Maser is basically 1% of the total that you have there after Shuma. We're assuming Shuma was taken off. So you take off 1% of the produce here, and you give that to the Kohen. That's Shumat Maser. The Maaser Rishon, which we said before again is Chulin, we say about that, Hamotzi Michaveiro Alav Haraya, that the Levi's got to prove to you that you really owe this money. It becomes now a monetary obligation rather than a religious issue in terms of removing the Maaser Rishon. Once you've separated it out, then it's no longer a problem in terms of Tevel. The Maaser Rishon itself is Chulin. The only question is a monetary decision about who owns it. Do I own it or does the Levi own it? And whenever we have a decision about monetary matters, we have a principle, which is a motzi mechavero alav haraya. Whoever wants to take it out of the possession of the current holder has to bring proof. Here, the Levi can't prove that there was no tumot maserot taken off of it, so it remains in your possession. The same is true with maaser ani. Maaser ani, you would separate it out to remove the shame tevel from the produce, but the aniim can't prove to you that it belongs to them. So therefore, again, you would keep it on a monetary basis. You'd keep it because there is no proof that it's not yours.
What do you do?
You eat it, because it's chulin. You can do whatever you want with it.
You
separate it, and then you can use it for your own purposes. The only thing, maaser sheni, which is you have to separate it out, but there you can't just say, motzi mechavero alav haraya. There it needs to end up in Yerushalayim. Now, there's really no loss to the Baalim in the sense that it's yours when you get up to, you get up to Yerushalayim. The difficulty is you have to get it to Yerushalayim. So in general, what they did was you redeemed it onto money, the maaser sheni, and then you dealt with that money, taking it up to Yerushalayim and utilizing it in Yerushalayim when you're all the rego, whenever you wanted to do it. But that's how you took care of Maaser Demai. So that Maaser Sheni is not a big loss to you. So that's the basic way you dealt with Demai. The other possibilities of things that you might have to remove is Chala. Chala is something that when you have grains and then you need them, then there's a Chiyuv Chala. The Chiyuv Chala depends on who you are. If you're a Balabait, if you're someone that's making it for your own usage, then it's 1/24th of the chala is separated out to the Kohen. And if you are a wholesaler or on a commercial scale, then you'll have to take off 1/48th for chala. So those are the items that you would have to remove in cases where you're uncertain as to what the Amaretz did. Now, over here, Tanatam, we have a mission over there. Hanachtomim, talking about bakers, as Rashi points out, Aluchim Tvua mi Amaretz. They're purchasing Tvua from Amaretz. Tosafot Tavir spends a lot of time with Yerushalmi about all these different scenarios, about who's a chaver, who's not a chaver, which type of baker we're talking about, who he bought it from. Our Gemara is talking about a case where he bought it from an Am Aretz, but the Nachtom himself is a chaver. Now, being a chaver creates two responsibilities for you. One responsibility is that you take care of your produce, but also is a responsibility that you don't let anything leave your hands that would cause anybody else a problem. So here, if you're a baker, you've got to deal with the fact that you purchased this grain from an Am Aretz. You can't just say, okay, it's from an Amaretz, I'll just bake it and let it go, and that's it. No, you have to deal with it because you are a chaver. So therefore, lo chayvu otan chachamim lafrish elu chumat maaser v'chala. Chamim didn't require them to remove anything except chumat maaser and chala. So now chala, like chumat gedola, like chumat maaser, has the same din of mita b'dei shemayim. So of course you have to remove the chala, and of course you have to remove the chumat maaser. That's what we discussed before about Demai. Here the Gemara is going to say, bishlama chumat gedola lo. You didn't have to separate out Shuma Gedola, because what we mentioned before, Detanya, the fish shalach b'chol gvulei Israel, Yochanan Kohen Gadol, sent out to surveyors throughout the land of Israel, v'rash, ein mafrishim ele Shuma Gedola bilvat. It's clear that they were taking off Shuma Gedola, but nothing more than that. Again, we discussed why they were taking off Shuma Gedola, but there was no suspicion with regards to the fact that they were taking off Shuma Gedola. Maaser Rishon u'Maaser Ani Nami. Maaser Rishon u'Maaser Ani, I understand why they don't have to give that. That's what we discussed before. Because once you've separated them out, they become simply a monetary obligation. And therefore, Amotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. Someone wants to come and take that from you, the Levi or the Ani, he's got to prove that you really owe this money. Ela Maaser Sheni, I don't understand why you don't have to take off Maaser Sheni in this case. Nifrisho, let him separate it. Vinisko Vinichlu B'Yerushalayim. Let him separate it, take it up to Yerushalayim and eat it in Yerushalayim. In a sense, there's no loss to him because it's he himself who's consuming it in Yerushalayim, but at least he should separate it out and deal with it as Maaser Sheni. Why are we not obligating him to deal with this Maaser Sheni? Again, when we discussed the Mai, these are one of the items that we discussed that has to be dealt with this Maaser Sheni. So the problem here is that we see the problem of Trumat Maaser being dealt with, see the problem of Chalav being dealt with, but we don't see is the problem of Maaser Sheni being dealt with. And the Gemara wants to know why in this case are we not dealing with it. There is another principle. When Yochanan Goy Gadol sent out those surveyors, he found out that, number one, Trumah Gedolah, everybody took off. Number two, he found out was that Rov Amearetz Masrim Hein. The majority of Amearetz were taking off Masrot. It seems to me this was not a super majority. It was a slight majority, but the majority of them were taking it off. The Chachamim said, well, we're dealing with a serious issue of Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemayim, and since this is not a majority like 95%, but rather a majority that's maybe 55, 60%, we'd rather you take off the Trumat Maser, where there's not a lot, it's all 1% loss to you, that we'd rather you take care of that and not be at risk for a Chiyuv Mita Bidei Shemayim. Right, anytime you dealt with produce of the Amei Aretz, we wanted you to deal with this because the trade-off is worthwhile. So even though, a la Rov, you could have been Somech on the Rov, Mido Raita, Mido Rabbanan, they said, we don't want to be Somech on it because this is not a super majority. It's a slight majority. The Gemara says over here, Amar Ula, Mitoch, Shiparhedrin Halalu, Choftin Adan Kol Yubit Chodesh, these Parhedrin, this is why this is brought down here, these Parhedrin who are appointed every 12 months, basically beat them up, Pamrim Lan, Machru Bezol, sell cheap, sell cheap, Lo Atrachu Rabbanan, their Bana did not impose upon them. So what seems to happen here, the way Rashi describes it, is every 12 months the new official was appointed, or he had paid for his position. Now he's got to make money at this position. So what he did was he either forced a taxation onto these bakers. So every time they came to power, they were beating up the bakers to pay them more in terms of taxation. And there was a huge loss in terms of the bakers. Their margins were being eaten up by these political officials. Now if you ask them to separate out more and more and more, including Maaser Sheni and the cost of taking it up to Yerushalayim, you're basically wiping out the margin of the bakers. So in order to preserve the margin of the bakers, we said leave the Maaser Sheni alone, and we'll be somech on the din of Rov Amearetz Masrin. That will assume that that was the case, and therefore we'll leave it intact. But this Parhedrin were causing the problem. Now the way the Gemara phrases is, machru bezol, maybe they have to justify their position. Which is they came to power and they had to show they were doing something for the people or for the government, they pushed the bakers to lower the prices. Now, I don't know if that was to them personally, and then they resold it at a higher price, or is that they did it in general. They wanted to show that they did something good for the public in general, and they were getting the prices down. Whatever it was coming out of the margins of the bakers, and therefore, they wanted to help the bakers out a little bit. Now, the Gemara says, Mar Parhedrin, what are these Parhedrin? So, Porsi, as Rashi says, Pekidei HaMelech. These are appointees of the king. The same description as we have by us, by Parhedrin, but the Gemara brought this as well, because it has this Parhedrin that are involved in it, these government officials that are appointed every 12 months. The one thing that Tosafot actually asks is about the Trumat Maser. It says, why don't we allow him to sell it? Trumat Maser, again, you can't eat it, because it has a dinner of Trumat. Trumat Maser is a Chiyu Mita Bidei Shemayim for a Zara to consume it. But why don't we allow you to sell it to the Kohanim, cheap, because you're not going to get full price for Trumat Maser, because you have a limited number of eaters of this. Only Kohanim can eat it. But they would buy it off of you, at least at some discounted price, they would buy it from you. And again, why don't we say, Motzi Mechavero Ala Baraya? And so yes, in terms of the religious obligation, you can't eat the Trumat Maser. In terms of the monetary obligation, you should at least be able to say to the Kohen, look, you can't prove it's yours, so at least pay something for it and I'll give it to you. So Tosfot says, Enochanami, maybe we should have done that, but because it was such a small amount, they didn't bother. It wasn't worth the tircha. For the 1%, for you to again put it up for sale and to get money for it, it just wasn't worth the trouble for the small amount of money you would get for it. So they just said, give it to the Kohen, and don't get involved with selling it. But technically, you would have the same principle you have by the other items, which is, At least on the monetary side, you should be able to hold on to the monetary value of it. The Tosfot says we didn't do that because of the 1% isn't such a big deal. All right, now the Gemara moves on and says, Amar Rabbi Bar Chanan, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, my dichtiv, what is meant by the pasuk, Yirat Hashem Tosif Yomim, the one who is fearful of heaven has extended days, extended life, Shnot Rishayim Tekatzerna, that the life of the Rishayim should be cut short. Yirat Hashem Tosif Yomim, and that there should be longevity to one's life if they have Yirat Hashem, Zem Mikdash Rishon. This is talking about the Beit Mikdash Rishon, Shamad Arba Meot Ve'Eser Shanim, stood for 410 years, Below Shimshu Bo Ella Yudchet Kohanim Gedolim. There are only 18 Kohanim Gedolim that served in Bayit Rishon. The Gra has the girsa here of Yud Bet, 12 Kohanim. The Sifrei and other sources like the Yushalmi actually have either 8 or 9 over here. Tosafot spends a lot of time discussing this, so he comes up with ways to deal with our 18. He says either there were really only 9 that are listed in Divrei HaYamim. If you go to Divrei HaYamim, those 9, he says, well, if you count the Kohen Gadol, plus the Skan Kohanim, the backup Kohen Gadol, then you get to 18. If you take the 9 and then you have a backup, you get to 18. Now, even though they're not going to do that in the next statement of the Gemara, they're only going to count Kohanim Gadolim, he's saying that it's an extreme. They're saying, even if you count the Kohanim Gadolim plus their backups, you only get to 18 in Bayit Rishon. That's one way to deal with it. The other way he suggests is that when it's talking about here in Bayit Rishon, it doesn't just mean Bayit Rishon, it means mi Pinchas Veilech, from after Pinchas, post Pinchas, who is granted the Kuna Gdola, then anybody who is from Pinchas was counted. If you count those, you get to 18. If you start basically from Shiloh, you count those that are Pinchas, you get to 18, with the exception of the last 2 Kohanim Gdolim, who are put into exile. One in Galut Yechaniah and one in Galut Tzidkiyahu. Since they didn't finish out their terms, they're not counted towards those 18. So if you go to Divrei Yamim and you count the Kohanim Gdolim based from basically after Pinchas, you get to the point where you'll end up with 18, excluding the latter 2. So that's another way that Tosafot gets to 18 Kohanim Gdolim. But either way, the point of the Gemara is that there's a limited amount of Kohanim Gdolim over a large span of time. They're probably averaging about 45 years if you say 9. It's about 20 plus years if you're talking about 18 of them. So you're dealing with decent terms of office for the Kohanim Gdolim. Shnot Rishayim Tikatzerna Ze Mikdash Sheni. This refers to the Bayit Sheni. Shamad Dalmeot Vesrim Shana. Stood for 420 years. This is a very controversial number. They mentioned it over here. They also darshan it out of Pim from Gematria and other places that it's 420 years was Bayit Sheni. According to most of the secular historians, the Bayit Sheni stood for about 586 years. What we call the missing 146 years. And it has to do with the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah that we'll get to. In the Gemara early in Rosh Hashanah, where Chazal say about the Persian kings that are mentioned in Navi, that they say, Echad hu, Echad hu, Echad hu, they say they're all one person. So they have numerous names, like Paro, like Avimelech, which were terms used to describe the king of the area, not necessarily that they were the same person. The Pharaoh was the Pharaoh no matter whether he was changed over. That was the title given. So too, in Persia, you have these titles like Arkhatashta and Daryavish, Koresh. They say that all 3 of those Persian names are one king. So by doing that, they shorten the Persian rule significantly. And in doing so, they also cut down the length of time that Bayit Sheni is standing. Question as to why Chazal did this, whether they were aware or not aware of it, subject to much controversy, and deals with the answer why they did it. Part of it also was during this period of time, they switched the way that we count the years. Until that point in time, they had counted the years based on what seems to be Briat Olam, or was based on the years of the king that was at rule. Over there, they switched to Minyan Ashtarot. Minyan Ashtarot counts from the beginning of Greek rule, Greek dominion, when the Greeks conquered the Persians. So then they switched the counting system at that point in time. And later in the time, the Gonim was switched back to Briat Olam, with a slightly different count, off by 1 year, which also could have caused either the confusion or intentionally did it in order to subvert the fact that they were more years here. Again, there's much written about this, just noting it, that the 420 years is not a simple item. V'shimshu bo yoter mishlosh miot kohanim. And more than 300 kohanim gdolim served during that period of Bayit Sheni. Same ma'am. Now we know that we have certain kohanim gdolim that had large terms, which is mem shana shishimei shimon atzadik. Shimon atzadik serves as a term for about 40 years. Ushmonim shishimesh Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Yochanan Kohen Gadol serves for 480 years. Eser shishimesh Ishmael ben Fibi. So now already you're up to 130 years that you have over three people. That means that the remaining 297 are serving over about 290 years. So you have serious shortage or short terms that we're dealing with over here. You're dealing with less than a year per Kohen Gadol after that. Yishmael ben Faibish have been familiar to you from the Gemara in Pesachim. He's one of the Kohanim Gedolim that was mentioned in the Gemara in Pesachim with regards to when we said certain Kohanim Gedolim were mentioned positively and certain were mentioned negatively. Yishmael ben Faibish happened to be mentioned positively afterwards, and he's mentioned negatively that they used to beat up the people to get their Shumot and Masrot. Over there, Rashi Tosafot answered that it was his servants that did it, not necessarily him or those that came after him. But we know, again, that that's found in Josephus. Yisrael ben Faibi, or Faiti, is mentioned in Josephus. And Josephus says that that was their practice, that their servants used to go up and beat up the people in order to get the Trumot or Masrot, to remove the Matnot Kehuna from them. That's this Yishmael ben Faiti. He ends up having an interesting end to his life. He gets into an altercation with Agrippa Zamelech, because Agrippa Zamelech raises the palace of the king, the Herodian palace that's adjacent to the Beit HaMikdash. He raised it up above the wall of the Beit HaMikdash because he wanted his dining room to overlook the Beit HaMikdash to watch the Avodah inside of the Mikdash. So he wanted his large dining room so that he was able to eat his meals sitting there watching the Kohanim perform the Avodah. The Kohanim took offense to that and said that it was inappropriate that the king should have something where he's looking in onto the work of the Kohanim. That was a denigration of the Kedushat HaMikdash, that he should have his dining room looking over into the Beit HaMikdash. And therefore, they built a wall. They built a large wall to block his view of the Beit HaMikdash. He, of course, he's the Melech, so they couldn't really do much about it, but they actually took it to the provost, or to the Roman designee, who was over that area at the time, and he allows them to petition Nero, who is the emperor. Yishmael ben Faibi travels with a delegation of Chashuvim to Rome to petition Nero, and in the end, as according to Josephus, Nero grants them the right to put up the wall, and he says that Agrippus is wrong. The only thing is that Nero's wife was a religious woman, and she liked to have her own personal priests. So she actually keeps Yishmael ben Faibi and someone else as her personal priests, and they never return back home. They actually left in Rome, and they can't go back, according to Josephus. So in the end, he wins, but he loses. He wins the battle, loses the war. He wins the battle, they're able to keep the wall up, but he can't go back home. And he's left there, he's no longer the Kohen Gadol. And Josephus discusses that there was another Kohen Gadol appointed by Agrippus after that. Again, similar to what the Gemara describes here, that the Kohen Gadol was appointed by the king. Agrippus is the one who's deciding who the Kohen Gadol is, not done out of necessarily who deserves, or who is, should be rightfully be the Kohen Gadol. Alright, so that's Yishmael ben Faibi, who we've seen before. There's another 11 years that Rabbi Zeo ben Chorsum, so now you're down to like 279. And then, pretty clear that they weren't even getting through 1 year worth of being the Kohen Gadol because they were being changed over so quickly. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta. Now, if you look in the Aleph in the Bach, they actually has an additional explanation here. He says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta, v'chol kach lama. Why is it in Bayit Sheni they had so many Kohanim Gedolim? The fish ayu lochim ota b'damim, because they purchased it. The Amar Rabbi Asi, Tarkava didanrei, ailele martyr bat baitus leyanai malko. So there was a Tarkava. Tarkava is a measurement, 3 kav, worth of coins. Martyr bat baitus paid to Yanai HaMelech, paid to the king. Adukme le Yoshua ben Gamla b'kanei ravarve. Until he appointed her husband, Yoshua ben Gamla, as the Kohen Gadol. So there's a citing evidence of the fact that they were actually paying money to have the Kohen Gadol become the Kohen Gadol. Again, it was lucrative. If you paid money, it was a position of stature, but also granted you a certain amount of rights, and it was a lucrative position to be the Kohen Gadol, and therefore it was worth the money to get the prestige and the value out of being in that position. So Martha Babaitus basically bribes, she was a wealthy woman, bribes Yanai HaMelech to allow her husband Yoshua ben Gamla to be the Kohen Gadol. So now they continue with it. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Torta has another memra here. Mipnei machar vashilo. Why was Shiloh destroyed? Mipnei shayu ba shnei dvarim. There were two problems in Shiloh, two sins. Gilo arayot ubizayon kodoshim. Illicit relations and bizayon kodoshim, the denigration of kodoshim. Gilo arayot ichtiv. Gilo arayot is written in the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Bet. This is after Shmuel is dropped off in the Mikdash. Shmuel is growing up. Shmuel, Chana's son, is actually going to become basically the replacement for Shiloh. He's basically going to lead to the destruction of Shiloh and take over, because Shiloh is going to be destroyed because of what's happening with Eli's sons, Pinchas and Chofni, are not acting appropriately. And here's one of the items. Ve'eli zakein ma'od, he was extremely old. V'shamad kol asher yasun banav v'chol Yisrael. And he was hearing the rumors about what his children were doing to Bnei Yisrael. But asher yishkivun et anashim atzovot petach o'moed. They were sleeping with the women who assembled, who gathered together at the Petach O Moed. He does speak to them. Eli speaks to them and says, Lo tov hashmua, I'm not hearing good things. Guys are straightening out. Obviously, they don't listen to him. Now, from the pasuk, it sounds like they're actually sleeping with the women. This is a statement we have many times in another place. There they have a list of individuals who are included, including this week's Parsha, Ruvain and Bilha. That Ruvain didn't sin with Bilha. That's also mentioned in this series of items that Kol Omer Ruvain Chata Eino Elo To'eh Mitoch Shesha'u Et Kinehem, because they held over their karbanot Miu Male Aleina Katuv Ilu Shachvum. It's as if they slept with them. So what it was, these were women who were Yoldot, who brought up their karbanot in order to become Tehorin and to return to their husbands. And instead of putting the korbanot on the Mizbeach right away, they were lazy. They didn't do it right away. The women had to stay overnight. Because they stay overnight, they're away from their household for that night. So they consider as if they slept with them because they prevented them from going back to their husbands. So that is a cleaner way of describing what exactly they were doing, even though it's ascribed to them that they slept with the women. The pasuk seems to be explicit, although if you read on in the perek, it's not exactly clear that here the pasuk mentions it, but later on the psukim that mention what they get into trouble for and to mention it, other issues and not this, and so then it's questionable. Maybe it isn't so far-fetched, the explanation of Chazal over here. Then there's also a second pasuk, which is Bazion Kodoshim Dichtiv, and this is also a difficult thing, which is Gam Betarmi Yaktiruna Techelev. This is actually three psukim in a row over there, which is earlier in the same parak. We just quoted a pasuk from later in the parak. Now earlier in that parak, it says, Gam b'term yaktirun et hachelef, before they put what belonged to the Mizbeach. The Korbanot went to the Mizbeach. Ba nara kohen. Now whether this means the young kohen, meaning Chofni and Pinchas, or nar sometimes means the servants of the kohenim. But ma the isha zoveach, to the person who is bringing the korban, it's not basar, let's slot the kohen. Please give a piece of the meat to the kohen to be roasted. V'lo yikach mimcha basar mibushal. We're not going to take the cooked stuff. Ki im chai. We want it raw. Right now, we want it. Vayomer elav ha'ish kater yaktirun, kayom ha'chelev. Let us at least get the chelev on the mizbeach. V'kachacha kasher tavei nafshecha. And you can take what you please. After the chelev's on the mizbeach, then you can take your portion, or not even their portion. We'll give you whatever you want. V'amar lo. Now, v'amar lo, which says to him, but over there, that's a Korean ktiv. The actual one is lamed aleph. V'amar lo. No. Ki ata titain. You're going to give it right now. Bimlo, if you don't give it, lakachti b'chozka, I'm going to take it forcibly. Vati chatata ni'arim gidola me'od, the sin of Narim was extreme, et pnei Hashem ki ni'atzu anashim et mincha Hashem. People despise bringing korbanot anymore. They didn't want to bring korbanot because of what was taking place. What was going on in the Mikdash. Here, they weren't even getting the chelev on the mizbeach. The portion that was going to Hashem wasn't even coming. And the kohanim were stealing and taking the meat from the people, the balim that brought it. Now again, there it's also described that they used to stick their fork into the pots, whatever they were cooking and whatever came out, they used to keep for themselves. And there was this wholesale, again, they were shaking down, the people were bringing up the korbanot, and people then despised coming to Shiloh. And that's the problem. Why Shiloh is being destroyed is because they basically taken away the sense of it being the Kodesh Lashem in a place that Hashem is found because of what they are doing, how they're acting. So these are the two sins associated with Shiloh, which is Bizayon Kodoshim and the Gilui Arayot. Mikdash Rishon, Mipnei Macharav. Why was Mikdash Rishon destroyed? Mipnei Gimel Dvarim Shayubo. Because of the three cardinal sins that were there. Avodah Zarah, Kidui Arayot, Ushvichut Damim. Idol worship, illicit relations, and murder. Avodah Zarah Dichtiv. Avodah Zarah we know from the Pasuk in Yeshayahu, because it says, Ki Katsara Matza Mihistareya, Vamasechat Zara, Kihit Kanes. So my Katsar HaMatza Mihistareya, which means, the bed is too short for the individuals to stretch out on. So what does that mean? Amar Rabbi Yonatan, Katsar Matzazeh, Mistarer, Alav Shnei Re'im Ke'echad. This bed is too short for two friends to be on it together. Now they based that on the second half of the Pasuk, which is V'masichat Sarah. Sarah is like a co-wife. That's the terminology that's used in the Torah and the Mishnah for a co-wife. So this bed isn't long enough to have two co-wives on it, implying that the people, their allegiance was both to Hashem and to Avodah Zarah at the same time. Those are two wives. The Navi always describes the Avodah Zarah like an illicit relationship with a woman. So over here, they were cheating, quote-unquote, on Hashem. Well, how do you cheat on Hashem? Is that you're worshiping Avodah Zarah. So that's what's being described over here. So over there, the literal meaning of the pasuk is that the coverings or the blankets are too narrow to wrap us up in. But now the Gemara is going to dash about that. Hamasecha is referring to mask, but the mask of Avodah Zarah. The masichot of Avodah Zarah, not enough room for both of us to be wrapped up there. And that's Amar Shmuel bar Nachmani, Kimati Rabbi Yonatan, the high cry. When Rabbi Yonatan reached this pasuk, Bochi used to cry. Amar Madich Divei, the one who said about him, Hashem Konis Kaned Me'ayam, he can pile into heaps all the waters of the seas. Nazalo Masicha Tzara, and that the Masicha becomes his competition, or he can play it in many ways. It becomes his competition, his co-wife, or there's not enough room for both of them, that the Masicha is squeezing out Hashem, after Hashem, who can take care of all the waters of the seas, and now he's getting squeezed out by a Masicha. So it was a difficult pasuk to read, that's what was happening, or that's how the people were treating Hashem. Giloy Arayot Tichtiv, here you have the explicit pasuk in the beginning of Yeshayahu. Hayom Hashem, Yan, Ki Gavu Benot Zion, because this is the reason that Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed and you're going to be put into Galut, is because the women of Zion, the daughters of Zion, are haughty. Telachna Triot Garon, they walk around with outstretched necks, Umisakrot Einayim, and wanton eyes. Haloch Vitafof Telachna, they walk mincing along the ways, Ubraglehem Teakasna, and with their feet they are tinkling. Now the Gemara is gonna darshan the entire pasuk. Yan ki gabu benot Zion, what was it mean that they were haughty? Shehu malchot aruka betzad ktzara. They used to walk a tall woman next to a short woman to accentuate the features of the different women, so it was to draw attention to themselves. Teakasna natuyat goron, shehu malchot bekomas kufa. They used to walk around with standing up tall and straight. Now, komas kufa, in general in the Gemara in Kiddushin also uses the term komas kufa, generally means that someone who is walking around and there's no more room for anybody else. There, the Gemara uses in terms of dochek raglei shchina. Someone who walks around with komas kufa, standing upright, again, this is not about good posture, that they think so much of themselves that there's no room for Hashem. So same idea over here, with komas kufa means they walked around with a certain air to them. Umesakrote naim. What does that mean that they had wanton eyes? Or kroteinayim is that they winked. But here it means, davo malyan kuchla ineon, is to fill their eyes with the makeup. And again, in order to attract attention. Haloch v'tafof telachna. They were walking and mincing along the way. So what they used to do, shayu machot eke v'tzad godel. They used to walk very short steps. They used to walk with their heel to toe. So they were walking very, very small steps along the way. Something akin to the Japanese princesses that are trained to walk in that way. So they're walking in that way, which is a certain sense of modesty, supposedly, that they were walking in this way. Again, they did it in this way, but it drew attention. Because when you walk this way, people notice that they're doing this. They used to bring myrrh and balsam. They used to put it into their shoe. They used to put the liquid into their shoes. Umalchot b'shukei Yerushalayim, they used to walk around the marketplace of Yerushalayim, k'shemagiot etzel b'churei Yisrael. And when they reached the young men of Israel, bo'atot, they used to kick on the ground, umetizot alehen, and used to squirt out this perfume or this aroma on them, umachtisim ben yitzara ke'eres, and the gears over here change the achna. It's like the venom of a serpent. It used to enter into them and rile them up. So here you have a description of the behavior of the women, that what was going on. Now over here you have, what's interesting here is that what's described there, right? It's not full Gilui Ariyot, but obviously they were trying to attract the men's attention. And you only want to attract the men's attention because of the result and after effect of attracting their attention. But here, what is described here is many things here are actually tzniut, activities that are not necessarily out of the normal aspects of tzniut. But what's described here, and it's a very important concept, is that tzniut is not just a matter of inches or law, but it's also a matter of attitude. And what the Gemara is discussing over here is that they acted, or to the outside, they presented themselves as being tzanua, but it was clear that their tzniut was done to attract attention. So the fact that they were walking in this manner, which is a manner of tzniut to walk this way, but they did it intentionally in order to attract attention. They're walking slower and people were taking note of it. So all the things that they were doing were, quote unquote, under the rubric of tzniut, but they were breaching the spirit of tzniut. And that's why it's very important that tzniut is not just a matter of halacha. Without halacha, obviously, it doesn't matter. But when you have the minimum standards, once you get to the standards, then there's also an attitude that comes with tzniut. Tzniut is not simply doing whatever the halacha says. It also means presenting oneself in a tzanua fashion. And that's what was failing over here, was that they were using the tzniut as a vehicle to attract attention, which is the antithesis of tzniut. And because they were doing that, obviously they were doing it for illicit reasons in order to attract the attention of the men and to have illicit relations with them. But that was the problem that was going on in Yerushalayim. Shfichut damim, murder, dichtiv. Gam dam naki shafach menashe harbe me'od ad Hashem milei et Yerushalayim peh lepeh. That from one end to the other end, there was blood flowing in Yerushalayim because Menashe had killed so many people. And we know that again in the first parak in Yeshayahu also, they talk about the dam naki, you have to wash your hands of all the blood that you've spilled inside of Yerushalayim, that murder was not out of the question in these areas. So now, you see Dalet in the Bach. The Dalet in Bach says to go back down to the hay in the Bach, which is about three lines down from there. It says to continue the Gemara over here, which is, Rishayim hayu, ela shetalu bitchonam be'akodesh baruch hu. Those people in Bayit Rishon were Rishayim. They were sinning. They were doing the three cardinal sins. But they still, internally, they believed in Hashem. They trusted Hashem. Atan, the Mikdash Rishon, that refers to Mikdash Rishon, dichtiv. Because it says there in Micha, Roshea b'shochad ishpotu. Its heads will judge, adjudicate for money, through bribery. Koanea b'michir yoru. Its koanim will teach for money. Univia b'kesef yiksomo. They will divine for payment of silver. Val Hashem ishainu. But they still leaned on Hashem. Laymor saying, Halo Hashem bikirbeinu. God's amongst us. We have the Mikdash. God's here. Lo tove aleinu ra'ah. Nothing bad will happen to us. So even though they're acting completely inappropriately, they were doing all the wrong things, they nevertheless still, they believed in Hashem. They thought that Hashem would take care of them. Despite their externalities, they thought Hashem would take care of them. Lefikach, hevi aleihem kodesh baruch hu gimel gzerot. Hashem brought on them three decrees. Keneged gimel averot should be adam. Keneged the three averot on their hands. Shenamar. Lachain, pasuk in Michot, continuation there of the next pasuk. Lachain biglochem tzion sadeh techarish. Because of you, tzion will be plowed over. It's even in time of Bayit Sheni this happens. Yerushalayim iin tiyeh. Yerushalayim will come heaps of rubble. V'harabayit lebamot yar. And harabayit will come like the high places in the forests. Desolate. So that's the punishment. There are three things here. Tzion sadeh techarish. Yerushalayim iin tiyeh. And harabayit lebamot yar. Those three punishments connected the three sins or cardinal sins that they did. Okay, now over here we flip back to Dalet in the Bach, where you see that. Aval Mikdash Sheni. In Mikdash Sheni, Shayu Oskim B'Torah U'B'Mitzvot U'Migmilut Chasadim. They were Torah, Halachic Jews to the nth degree. Mipnei Macharav. Why was it destroyed? Mipnei Shaita Bo Sinat Chinam. Because the problem of Sinat Chinam, baseless hatred, to teach you, Shishkula, Sinat Chinam, Keneged Shlosh Averot. That Chinam is just as bad as the three cardinal sins, Avodah Zarah, Gilui Arayot, Ushvichut Amim. That's the scale that we're looking at in terms of Sinat Chinam. Now, in terms of Sinat Chinam, baseless hatred is a very hard concept to understand. I mean, what does that mean, baseless hatred? That you just hate somebody all of a sudden? Alright, so we do see it today, unfortunately. The best explanation I've heard ever of Sinat Chinam is not that there was no reason to be upset, not that there was no reason to have a certain amount of disenchantment with other people, but Sechinat Chinam means that it's disproportionate to the activity. Somebody does a wrong to you, you've been wronged, okay, you can be upset. But how upset are you? How do you react to that slight? Or if you have an altercation, or you have a disagreement, how do you react to it? Sechinat Chinam is, baseless hatred means that the disproportionate return of venom and hatred that is not in proportion to the slight that was done to the individual. And that's Sinat Chinam, and that very much can be explained and is a psychological phenomenon that exists still today, which is that people who feel that they are in disagreement with others or they've been slighted by others, they take it out to the nth degree where there's no control of their hatred and the venom that fused forth after this. Or that when they're in a disagreement, anything is justified because their position is right. That's Sinat Chinam. Sinat Chinam is where the Sinat far exceeds what would be considered to be normal interaction between people or normal disagreements between people. Everybody understands that you can have disagreements. Everybody understands you can have differences of opinion. How those manifest themselves, that's the problem here, and that's the Sinat Chinam. And if you read Josephus again, if you take any look at Josephus coming into the Korban HaBayit Sheni, what's described in Yerushalayim is just beyond terrible. About there they were killing each other. The Jews were literally killing each other. They considered anybody who even remotely was considered to be consorting with the enemy or wanted to give in to Rome and save the city, they were considered enemies and they killed them. There was wholesale murder in Yerushalayim of Jews. The Romans didn't even have to get in there. I mean, there were more Jews killed by the Jews before the Romans ever get there. I mean, then once the Romans get there, they also have a wholesale slaughter of the Jews. That is only because, again, they refused to agree to the terms of surrender. What's described in Josephus is just earth-shattering. If you read it, you cannot believe this is what was going on inside of Yerushalayim. That's the Sinat Chinam that we are speaking about. So the Gemara now continues after where we left off before about the Bayit Rishon, which is right before the widest line. Right before that, Umigdash Rishon, Lavibe Sinat Chinam. In Bayit Rishon, there was no Sinat Chinam, only in Bayit Sheni. Vaktiv, doesn't the Pasuk say in Yecheskel, Migurei El Cherev, Hayu Et Ami, Lachain spoke Al Yerech. So these people were terrorized by the sword. Lachain spoke Al Yerech, hit your hand on your thigh. Now, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Elu Bnei Adam, Shochlim Vishultim, Zeim Zeh. They consort with each other. Vidokrim, Zed Zeh, Becharvot, Shibulishonam. But then they kill each other with the swords or the spears that are in their tongues. They were supposedly friends. They acted outwardly towards each other as friends and in friendship and kinship. But then behind their back, stabbed them behind the back, but not stabbed literally, but with their tongues. I mean, with their speech, the way they spoke about them, the way they talked about them, there was no loyalty in a sense. So Mar says there, no, Hayi Benisiyah Yisrael, Havai. That wasn't true of all the Jews. That was only true of the aristocratic class. The Nisi'im, the princes of Israel, Dichtiv, because the Pasuk, this is the continuation of the Pasuk in Yechezkel, which is, Za'ak vechelel, cry and howl, Ben Adam, ki hi aita bi'ami, because this is what happened to my nation. Betania, what is Za'ak vechelel, Ben Adam? Yachol lakol, that you think you'd have to cry and howl for everybody, Talmud Omar, again, in the same Pasuk, hi bechol Nisi Yisrael. This is what's happened to my nation amongst the Nisi'e Yisrael, amongst the princes of Israel. So it's only true of the princes, it's not true of the Hamonam. So that Sinat Chinam did not exist in the Hamonam, and Vayit Rishon only existed in the Nisi'im. So Rabbi Yochanan v'Rabbi Lazar d'Amrei Tarvayu. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat, who is a Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan, the second generation of Moraim in Eretz Yisrael. Tarvayu say Rishonim, shenitgala avunam, nitgala kitzam. Because their sins were out in public, meaning that they didn't hide their sins. They did the three cardinal sins, and it was out in the public. They weren't pretending to be religious. Nidgalek hitzam. Therefore, their end was also revealed, which is that after 70 years, you're going to return here, and you're going to have a bayit sheni. Achronim shenon nidgalo abunam. The second bayit, where the people acted outwardly religious, but they were sinning underneath, meaning that they pretended to look like they were doing everything they were supposed to do, yet underneath it, they were sinning. Therefore, their end was also not, meaning that the end of the galut of the Bayit Sheni was also not revealed because they sinned in private, so too the Kates was kept private. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Tova Tziponan Shel Rishonim, Mikreso Shel Achronim. Better is the fingernails of the Rishonim, of Bayit Rishon, Mikreso, than the intestines of the Achronim. So obviously this means that the Tziporen, which is an ancillary part of one's body, that's of the Rishonim. That ancillary part is better than kreso, the intestines of the second bayit, meaning the later ones, which is something that's integral to your survival. Their little nails are better than our than the later intestines. Some of them are shlokish. Adarabah, should be the other way around. Achonim adife. Afagavdiga shibur machiot ka'aske b'torah. So okay, they're still, we were put into exile, but we still at least keep the Torah and we learn Torah. Amalei, bira tochiach. Chazra l'vishonim, lo chazra l'achonim. He says, sorry. But we have evidence. The Beit HaMikdash is evidence. Well, how's that evidence? Because after the first Galut, they got the Mikdash back again. That's evidence that Hashem forgave them and that they got it back. We never got the Mikdash back again. It shows that whatever the sin was, we haven't fixed that problem yet, and that problem still exists. So you can't say that the Achronim are better than the Rishonim. Shalu et Rabbi Elazar, Rishonim Gdolim, or Achronim Gdolim. Who were greater? The earlier ones in Bayit Rishon, or the later ones in Bayit Sheni? Amar Lahem, Tznu Enichem Bebira. He says, just look at the Mikdash. There's no Mikdash today that tells you what we think that happened with the Achronim versus what happened with the Rishonim who did get the Mikdash back. Ikta Damrei, Amar Lahem, Edechem Bira. Your evidence is the Bira. So a similar type of concept, just how he said it. Whether he said, Tznu Eichem Bira, take a look at the Har HaBayit Shemaim that's empty, or he says, all your evidence, you just need to know whether the Mikdash came back again. Different way of expressing the same idea. Meshlakish Avitzachi B'Yardono. Ish Lakish was bathing in the Yarden. Ata Rabba Barachano. So Rabba Barachano came. Yohev le Yodo. He extended his hand to help him come out of the Yarden. Amalei Eloka Tzanina Luchu. Ish Lakish looks at Rabba Barachano and says, God hates you. Rabba Barachano coming from Bavel. He says, God hates you. Dichtiv. Im Chomahi Nivne Alea Tirat Kesef. If it is a wall, then we will build battlements of silver on it. Vim Delati. If it's a door, Natsur Aleha Luach Arez. We will enclose it with boards of cedar. If you made yourself a choma wall, and everybody had returned to Eretz Yisrael in the time of Ezra, then you would be considered like silver, where there is no deterioration, there is no rust in silver. Silver lasts forever. And because of that, you would have lasted forever. You came up like doorways. Doorways, which is, if you think about a large doorway that has two doors in it, you open one and you leave one closed. Only half of it is open. So over here too, only a portion of the people returned to Eretz Yisrael. What happened to the other half? They stayed in Bavel. So therefore, nimshaltim ke'erez. Therefore, you are like the cedar. Sharekim shaletpo. By wood, there is rot that comes into it. As the Gemara say, my eres, amar ula, sasmigor. My sasmigor, amar Rabbi Abba, batko. That is the batko. Now, sasmigor, as described by Rashi over here, is a type of worm. A worm that lives in the cedar wood and causes it to rot. So too over there. With the cedar wood, if you leave it there for long duration, the inside gets eaten out, and the outside looks like it's fine. Again, it's a nice description of what happened in Bayit Sheni, that on the outside everything looks fine, but it's rotted on the inside. But that's because it was made out of eretz, because not everybody came. Had everybody come, it would have been made out of silver, there would have been no rot, there would have been no deterioration, and everything would have stayed. Now here he says it in a different expression. What's this? Sasmigor is referring to batkol. That there was also a deterioration in the forms of communication with Hashem, which is, Kedetanya, Mishemetu Nevi'im Achronim. Once the letter Nevi'im passed away, Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, or the later Nevi'im, Nistaka Ruach HaKodesh Mi'Israel. There was no longer any Ruach HaKodesh amongst Israel, but Dayin Ayu Mishtamshim Bebatkol. They had left over was the Batkol, the heavenly voices that we see mentioned in the Gemara a number of times. So therefore, because of what happened in Eretz Yisrael, partly because of the way they acted, but also because of the fact that not everybody came up from Bavel, they only got the Nevi'im that allowed them to rebuild the Bayit, and after that, things trailed off, and there was only a batkol left to Bnei Yisrael to communicate with Hashem, because the other people didn't come up. Even when the Mikdash is built, we don't see them coming up. Reish Lakish, mimi shtai b'hadi Rabba Barchana. But Reish Lakish even talked to Rabba Barchana. Uma Rabbi Elazar, de Maradari Israel, Rabbi Elazar. Again, Rabbi Yochanan, Reish Lakish, Rabbi Elazar, second generation of Moraim and Eretz Israel are peers. So here, Rabbi Elazar, who's the Maradaro, he's the head of Eretz Israel, is considered to be the posek for Eretz Israel, chief rabbi. Nevertheless, Aval lo mishtai, Reish Lakish b'adei, Reish Lakish didn't speak to him. Now, when it says it didn't speak to him here, it means he would not initiate. Reish Lakish would not initiate with him. Or the Tosfot Yishanim over here says that he wouldn't joke around with him at all. But he wouldn't talk to him in just casual conversation. Because, Taman Mishnai Reish Lakish Baday, anybody who has engaged with Reish Lakish, Beshuk Yavule Iska Belosade. They used to transact with him in the Shuk without evidence, without edim. Meaning that Reish Lakish had such a stature or consideration of honesty, that they felt that anybody that Reish Lakish spoke to was granted that same status. And therefore they were trusted without any evidence, without anything, because of what you spoke to him. So Reish Lakish was careful about who he spoke to because he knew the implications of who he spoke to. Therefore he wouldn't even speak to Rabbi Lazar on a casual basis because of the implications. To Hadi Rabbi Rechana Mishtai is going to talk to Rabbi Rechana Amar Papa Shadi Gavre Binayu. You have to throw in someone else here. Or it's Rabbi Lakish Viziri, and the other person who was involved with it was Ziri. Oh, Rabbi Barchana, Abba Rabbi Elazar. Or the story was between Rabbi Barchana and Rabbi Elazar. So one of them was in the water, one of them's on the outside, but it's not Reish Lakish on the inside and Rabbi Barchana on the outside. It's gotta be some other party. There's one other party involved here that would solve your problem. So Reish Lakish would not interact with Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who was a Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan, but was on a lower level or not considered to be an absolute peer of Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, then certainly Rabbi Barbarchano, who's a next generation Amora, he's a third generation Amora, not a second generation Amora, there's no way that he would have interacted with him. So the Gemara replaces Rabbi Barbarchano with Ziri. Ziri is Migdolei Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan. He's one of the greatest Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan and also Talmid of Rabbi Chanina. The Gemara tells us that Rabbi Yochanan wanted Ziri to marry his daughter, but Ziri refused because he had come from Bavel, And he thought the people in Bavel were yoter miyuchas than the people in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore he wiggled out of marrying Rabbi Yochanan's daughter. But from that you see the yachas that Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish had towards Ze'iri was on a much higher level than that of even Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat. We know that Ze'iri was on a higher level than Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat, despite the fact that Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat was the Mor de'Aro of Eretz Yisrael. And therefore they changed the story to read that it was Reish Lakish interacting with Ze'iri, which was a more plausible situation in which Reish Lakish would interact with him to give him that stature of Ne'manut because of the status of Ze'iri vis-a-vis Rabbi Lazar ben Pedat. Okay, we're going to stop over here. Reish Lakish continues the story here. He goes to Rabbi Yochanan to tell him what he said. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees with him, but that's going to lead us way into tomorrow's daf. So we're going to stop over here and we'll continue with that interaction between Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan tomorrow. Just want to note one thing here, which is the description of Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni is Tziporin and Kresol. The people in Bayit Rishon were like the Tziporin, like the nails, and the people in Bayit Sheni were like the Kresol, like the intestines. Now we know in the Parshiot of the animals that are tzmeim, that are non-kosher, over there are a series of animals that are described that only have one of the two simanei kashrut. There's the chazir, which has a simanei kashrut of the split hooves, but does not have the chew its cud. There are the three animals over there that chew their cud and do not have split hooves. Split hooves is an external siman, and chewing one's cud is an internal siman. So the way that Rabbi Yochanan describes, according to the Gra, the way Rabbi Yochanan describes the people of Bayit Rishon, is that they were of nails, fingernails. Why? Because that's the external sign. So they, in Bayit Rishon, their nails were the externality that they showed. They sinned, but they didn't hide from that. They believed internally, they believed in Hashem. They chewed their cud, they had the kosher siman on the inside, but they lacked the kosher siman on the outside. They had the tziporin. They had a nail instead of a split hoof. The nail shows that on the external side, they didn't have the simanei kashrut. But internally, they did have a siman kashrut, and that's what's described here. They sinned. They had the three cardinal sins on the outside, but they didn't hide that. They were sinning. And the inside, they betonam v'Hashem. They believed in Hashem, and they trusted in Hashem. In Bayit Sheni, it's the opposite way around. It's kreso. It's the intestines. On the outside, they showed the nails. They showed the split hooves. They pretended to be religious. On the inside, then everything was corrupt on the inside, and that is that they didn't chew their cud. I mean that they showed the external of being religious or having the siman kashrut, but internally, they acted in such a manner that didn't have this siman. They didn't have the siman kashrut on the inside. And that's also, Eretz Yisrael is ascribed to the Gulut Esav, which refers to Rome. The approach of Rome is to, again, on the outside, it shows a signs of civility, its own signs of acting religiously, but there's internal corruption. Whereas the Galut of Bavel and the other ones, these nations were outwardly corrupt. They weren't hiding it. They were outwardly corrupt and outwardly acted in inappropriate manners. And those are the first Galut that happened. So there's also a correlation between the Galiot that happened as well as the sins of the individuals. That it's Midah, Keneged Midah, that the nations that enslaved them in the first place were nations that, again, were externally worshipping Avodah Zarah and corrupt. Whereas the latter Galut was a nation that pretended to have civility and to act with a certain manner of appropriateness, but then internally everything was morally decrepit and corrupt. In addition, that's why there are three animals chew their cud but do not have the split hooves, whereas there's only one animal that has the split hooves and does not chew its cud. And that is because in Bayit Rishon there were three sins, and there were also three Galiot, the three nations that put Bnei Yisrael to Galut. The one, the Chazir, represents the Bayit Sheni, where there's only one sin, the sin of Sinat Inam, as well as it represents a single Galut of Esav of Rome. So that's just a nice explanation of the Gra for what transpired here between Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. Okay, we'll stop over here.